Linus Hall is the brewmaster at Yazoo Brewing Company. In college, he majored in civil engineering. But there are a lot of legends that surround his life. According to Alan Fay, the taproom manager at Yazoo, Linus also had a minor.
Eastern European basket weaving?
When you think about it, it actually kind of makes sense.
Take grains and you weave them together.
Several of the original baskets he used to carry grain to the brewery in the old days are now in the Linus Hall wing of the Smithsonian.
See, that sounds true.
It might be true.
It's not. Yazoo is a proud supporter of all neighbors everywhere sharing stories over a pint or a finely woven basket. Hey, Jacob here. A long time ago, if you had a toothache, you went to see a barber. Historically, barbers did more than just cut hair and shave beards. They performed surgery, dentistry, and the oh-so-popular bloodletting, where they would just cut you and let you bleed for a while. You know, to get better. Now, let's say it's the Middle Ages and there's a barber. We'll call our fictitious barber Rex. Rex is pulling out a tooth, and it's getting messy. So he grabs a rag. In this case, it's a white one. He shoves it in his patient's mouth, dabs a little blood from their cheek, then uses it to wipe off his own hands. Rex's victim is sent on his way, but now he has a wet, bloody rag. So he goes outside his shop and hangs it up to dry. As it's flapping in the wind, it dries for all the village to see. Several centuries go by. And that striped, bloody rag is crystallized deep into the collective consciousness and morphs into a symbol. The barber pole. Or at least that's one version of the story. And next to a dive bar in South Nashville called Santa's Pub, there spins this ancient symbol of bodily care. It's mounted on the wall outside of a small one-chair shop known as the Handsomizer. Stephen Mason stands behind his barber chair.
I don't do surgery, but I do maintain some of the old practices.
Yeah. Attached to the back of Stephen's hand is a large metal contraption that vibrates.
I think they made them in the 50s. You'll see them in antique stores.
He gives massages with this thing to get people to settle into the barbershop experience.
You need to get the person in the chair, like let them meld into the chair.
In Stephen's chair is a customer and friend, who is also named Steve, who says this is the moment he's been waiting for all morning.
And that shoulder that you're on right there, man, was tight. And I thought, soon I'll be in the capable and loving hands of my barber, Mr. Mason. Yeah. He'll be taking away that painful spot.
Yeah. So, yeah. Applying his trade to my shoulder.
Here in this one-chair shop, surrounded by a rapidly changing city, there's a sense of stability. Combs dipped in a jar of blue barbicide, a picture of Grace Kelly on the wall. It almost feels like the shop has always been here, like an old tree that's deeply rooted. But that's not the case.
There's things that I missed for so many years, you know, just traveling, being gone.
Stephen is a rather unlikely barber. He's lived an entirely different, exciting, and complicated life before cutting hair. He's a Grammy Award-winning musician. And in that life, he achieved one definition of success. Now committed to his one barber chair, he's achieving it in another.
I'm plugged in to the places where I spend time now because I have time to spend because I'm not traveling. I mean, that's an immediate notice. Walked my daughter to school today.
I'm Jacob Lewis, and from Nashville Public Radio, you're listening to Neighbors, a show about what connects us. Today's story, Barbershop Duet, Part 2. Stephen. If you haven't listened to Part 1, it's not essential. You can do it out of order, but it's definitely worth your time. In this story, we contemplate the difference between a life lived wide and shallow and one lived narrow and deep. In a small Christian college in Illinois, Stephen and some friends formed a band called Jars of Clay. They were what was known as a Christian band, but with the ability to cross over, like an Amy Grant or a Switchfoot. And they were successful. Stephen played guitar in the band, and you'd probably at least recognize their most famous 90s hit called Flood, but I don't have the rights to play that one, so here's a track off a 2013 record called Inland. We'll be right back.
the four of us, you know, dudes that met in college in the Midwest, you know, playing in between Def Leppard and Sarah McLachlan at Live Aid in Philadelphia, you know, when there were, you know, a million people on the mall right below the Rocky statue. That was remarkable. And then, I mean, we opened for Sting for a few shows. I mean, these are just people I grew up with. To think that we would share the stage. Yeah, overwhelming to say the least.
For a kid fresh out of college to be so successful was exciting. Big shows, people recognizing you, making money doing what you love. But there was a cost.
The first couple of years we started, we were doing, you know, 300 shows a year. So we were essentially on the road, and we had an apartment where we kept our stuff.
Think about that. 300 shows a year. That's barely one day off a week. And it's a common Nashville narrative to be living one exciting life on the road and another one at home that consists basically of sleep and trying to reconnect with friends and family.
To be rooted in the place that you live, I think doing music and traveling for a living makes that very difficult.
Waking up most days in a different town than the day before starts to wear on you after a couple decades. It was a good ride, but a long time. And with changes in the industry, the financial return was just no longer there for them.
We were taking a lot of gigs that we weren't happy to be doing. You really need to do this because, you know, the bottom line looks like this. It skews the interplay of art and commerce in a way that makes it feel just like a slog. And this is after 20 years. I don't mean to say that every gig needs to feel like, you know, Frampton coming alive again. But there was just a lot of stuff that was kind of killing our souls collectively.
But music is pretty much all Steven has done his entire life.
I mean, I did the fast food circuit in high school. McDonald's, did some time at Arby's.
So without an official set of certified skills outside of music, Steven had to dig deep and figure out who he was instead. One night, he and his wife were in their kitchen with a whiteboard. They were trying to be honest and ask some tough questions.
What is it I'm interested in? What makes me come alive? What would I like to try?
So they started to go back through Steven's experience. Who was he when he wasn't playing music?
We could acknowledge that I'm a complete groomer. Like, I'm one of the only people I know that, like, plucks his own eyebrows, you know, kind of a thing. Like, I have a little bit of a condition about that sort of thing.
They also realized one thing he highly valued touring all those years was
authentic conversation and sharing our broken places and how that develops genuine friendship.
So he enjoyed talking to people. In fact, he could do it all day. So he and his wife had an epiphany.
Barbering would be amazing because it's creative. I like working with my hands. And also there's this relational aspect. There's a connection with the client that I think really also satisfied some of that communal aspect. I tested it out with a few folks too. I talked to another friend that was a stylist and yeah, just said, what does this look like? You know, what's the reality of this sort of a life? And one of the first thoughts was, well, your schedule is a lot more loose. And that encouraged me that because after, you know, waking up in a different town every few days on the road, I wasn't sure how easily I would transition into driving the same place every day and then working, you know, 8 hours and going home.
So Steven applied to Barber College. And if you heard part one of this series, you'll be interested to know that Steven went to the same barber school as Ronnie, the subject of last episode.
Applying to the, you know, the trade school was interesting. It was different. You know, there were guys in school who were just out of jail, you know, and this was kind of the new investment in their lives. They were going to find a vocation after serving time. So I think the first couple of weeks when I started into class and I realized that, you know, a few of the teachers were half my age, I started to wonder if I'd made a horrible mistake. because it was so radically different from what I'd known prior.
But something kept Stephen going, something that he actually got from the road. As he played across the country, people would give him books all the time and say, "You've got to read this." One of those books was called Jaber Crow.
Wendell Berry's Jaber Crow was a part of the initial romantic tug of becoming a master barber.
It's about a man in rural Kentucky that is named Jonah. But people refer to him as Jaber. He thinks he's called by God to go into ministry, and he seriously pursues that calling. But along the way, he falls into the role of a small-town barber instead.
It is a beautiful book, and the way it articulates how he knew all the heads of the people in the community. There's some rich, rich words about that. It just made sense to me.
So the romantic lure of a stable and simple life kept Stephen going through school. And in 2014, he graduated and became a master barber. It's one notch above a regular barber's license. But he didn't have a job at a shop, so he started cutting people's hair out of his house. Friends mostly, and their kids. A lot of musicians would get a Thursday cut before heading out on the road for the weekend.
I had a, a little chair that I bought on Amazon.
He had scissors, clippers, but
I knew it wouldn't work legally.
He needed a real proper place of business with its own entrance to comply with zoning laws. So he was talking with his wife, and she had an idea of how to use something of the band's.
At the time, we'd been 10 years into ownership of a building. It was creative space for us, studio rehearsal.
It's known as the Jar Hole, which I can't decide if that's funny or just gross.
And there was a room off the back that we kept all our merchandise and, records and CDs and stuff. And she said, "What about if you guys cleared that out? I mean, it has its own separate entrance. It would totally work for you to have one chair in there." I was like, no. It's too small.
Remember, this is a man used to playing for a lot of people.
Yeah, I was terrified because I think probably in the moment I knew she was exactly right and that's exactly where I needed to be. Well, we drove over there and we quickly just realized, holy smokes, I'm going to do this.
So Stephen started to set up his shop. He moved out the records and merch and put in his barber chair. He added a hot lather machine and a mirror with a saying on it.
Reddit tonsus pulcher in aeternum, which is Latin, and what's more pretentious than a dead language?
And it means?
Shave, haircut, handsome, forever.
And as I mentioned earlier, a picture of the late actress Grace Kelly looks down from the wall.
Maybe approving, maybe disapproving. Maybe she has no feelings on the haircut, but she's my muse.
Stephen translates this attention to detail and aesthetics to people like his friend Steve.
Short enough. Do you want to go a little shorter through the...
That looks good.
Stephen's been running his shop, The Handsomizer, for a couple years now. A haircut costs $35, and it's going pretty well.
Yeah, it feels really consistent. It's a good flow. The folks that do come in are just wonderful friends, a kind of community.
He still plays music and can tuck away to the studio in between haircuts to lay down a guitar or bass track. In fact, he's actually in a Beatles cover band called 64 with his friend Steve, the guy currently in his chair. But most of Steven's time is spent in conversation with the men and women that come in.
What do you guys really talk about?
Well, there's nothing much to talk about politically right now. So it's pretty dry season when it comes to discussing, politics.
Obviously, that was a joke. He says that, in fact, politics and religion, the things you're not supposed to talk about, are exactly what come up.
Inevitably, at some point, it goes to YouTube because there's some two-minute clip of something that embodies something we've just talked about that will make us either laugh or unify us in our outrage or just make the space really uncomfortable. Like...
For Stephen, the handsomization process, as he calls it, you can't make this stuff up, is very much about having a
meaningful conversation that asks a second and third question rather than, volleys sound bites back and forth, and but you know, tries to get to the root of what drives us and what we're all afraid of, and so I come home exhausted, but many days I feel like, man, this is a gift to me. I mean, so
yeah, it's not a gift to us. We're paying for it.
Yeah, they're that's. That's true.
I kid you.
As I think about Stephen's life, I'm reminded of an Alfred Hitchcock quote. He supposedly once said, "Drama is life with all the boring bits cut out." Now, it used to be that Stephen was only known for the exciting parts. You know, opening for Sting. But a musician friend of mine pointed out to me that touring is actually mostly boring. Sitting on a bus, sitting in a hotel room, sitting in a green room. Not many people knew Stephen for those things. Whereas now, a community of people know Stephen for only those things, the ordinary parts. The snip of a scissor, the spritz of a spray bottle.
Are you afraid that you're going to get bored of this?
Some days I'm like, oh man, I gotta go to work. Life is lived in moments, and a haircut is a unique moment to be shared. Not to make too much of it, it's a haircut.
Neighbors is from Nashville Public Radio and produced by me, Jacob Lewis. This story was edited by Mac Linebaugh, Emily Siner, and Anita Bug. Music by Poddington Bear, Dan Burns, and Jars of Clay. If you like the show, please leave me a rating or review in iTunes. I love reading them, even if they're bad. It's just you care enough to reach out. Neighbors is a proud and founding member of The Herd. That's H-E-A-R-D. We're an audio collective of producers all over the country, including Canada. I highly, highly recommend checking out all the shows in The Herd, especially one of our newest shows, Rumble Strip Vermont. You can find it and more information at theherdradio.com. That's H-E-A-R-D radio.com. Thanksgiving is coming up, and as you gather around the table and watch all the delicious dishes come out, I encourage you to ask yourself the tough questions.
What is it I'm interested in? What makes me come alive? What would I like to try?
I'm Jacob Lewis, and I'm reminding you to get to know your neighbors.